compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hello and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Thank you for listening. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And lo and behold, we do have some lines open. As often happens, the lines do get busy quickly. So I've had a number of people in recent days in my travels say, well, I call and I get a busy signal. So my advice to them is always call early in the hour and you have a much better chance of getting on the air as people are beginning to get into an orderly queue. I'd like to begin the show by sharing with you something that happened to me yesterday. And it was really bad turbulence on a flight that I took from Chicago back home to where I live in Columbus, Ohio. Now, I've been doing a sort of a grand tour this past week, and I had a speaking event. It was a Relevant Radio gala in the Twin Cities. This was a little over a week ago. Yeah, it was a week ago today, now that I think about it. It was the Christ Brings Hope event. Many of you in the Twin Cities attended that event. And it was wonderful. It's great to meet you, as it always is. And then from there, I traveled by plane down to Orlando, and I did a big event there. Shout out to all my Orlando friends and all of my friends at JMJ Pregnancy Center. You guys are great. And from there, I went back up to Chicago, and then I went to speak at a parish in the Quad Cities area on the western fringe, the western edge of the great state of Illinois. And my hotel was literally right on the Mississippi River. I mean, there was like a little jogging path, and then there's the water. That's how close it was. And I had a wonderful time there. Great opportunity to meet Relevant Radio listeners. I gave a couple of talks at the Our Lady Guadalupe Parish. Shout out to Father Peter Zorgin and all the wonderful people at that parish and everybody who attended. That was great. Then I made my way back to Chicago, and I got on my flight to come home. It's just pro forma. This is standard stuff. I do it all the time. Maybe you do too. Maybe you travel a lot. And so I'm in and out of airplanes all the time. And yeah, I've been in turbulence before. And there have been a few times when it's been very unpleasant. And I've even asked like the flight attendants before, does this kind of turbulence bother you? And they said, nah, we get used to it. And I've asked some pilots. And they said, nah, it doesn't really bother us. Well, yesterday evening, and this, there's no real big, you know, reveal or anything like that. I just want to share with you what happened. So we take off and we're heading across Lake Michigan, and that was pretty fine. I mean, a little bumpy here and there, but no big deal. Nothing out of the ordinary. And then we get into western Michigan, and then the fun starts. So we're flying in dark clouds. And I've always wondered, you know, why don't the pilots just go up a little bit so that at least you're up above the clouds. Now I recognize that there are flight corridors and you're told what altitude you have to be at. I understand all that. I'm just, as the passenger, it makes it a little less nerve-wracking to be able to see something out the window other than just dark clouds. So the long and the short of it is, for about a half an hour, we went through some of the most unpleasant turbulence that I've ever been through. Now, I would assume that pilots and flight attendants and maybe others who travel a lot have been through even worse than that, but it was probably about as bad as I've ever felt it. And you may be saying, well, what did you do? Well, I took my rosary out of my pocket, and I had already prayed my rosary that day, so I prayed a Divine Mercy chaplet and asked the Lord to have mercy on us and please don't let this plane crash and all the things that you would naturally think in a moment like that. And as I was thinking about this, in the plane, I'm telling you, the plane was like not just like rattling and rocking, it was turning sideways, like the right wing would dip way down and the pilot would ride it back up again, and it's lurching up and down and dropping. It felt like it anyway. It felt like it was like dropping hundreds of feet. There was one moment that lasted, I don't know, 5-10 seconds where we were weightless. And I'm not sure whether the plane was diving or climbing. I don't know what it was exactly. But you have the sensation of being weightless. It was weird. And it was scary, quite frankly. I don't, you know, there's no shame in it. I was scared. And this it was a regional jet, maybe 50 people on board, and I'm sure there were many other planes in the air in the vicinity that were probably going through similar moments of terror. So for me, it was just a very unpleasant 30 minutes or so bobbing around in that airplane, and all those irrational fears start to come out. You know, like, well, what if a wing snaps off? If a wing snaps off, obviously you're doomed because the plane's going to go straight down. So what if a wing snaps off? What if, something else damages the plane and it can't fly and it goes straight in or something like that? So all these fears of the unknown start popping up in my mind and probably the minds of other people. Although I must say, there were two people sitting to my right. I was on the left side of the plane. There were two people sitting to my right, and it was surreal about how they just continued their conversation with a little nervous laughter here and there when the plane would jolt and drop and such. Everyone else on the plane was very quiet. I was saying, my divine mercy, chap. I'm laughing now. Believe me, I was not laughing then. And, you know, so the other thing is they have internet on the planes now. So I text my wife, hey, honey, really bad turbulence right now. Please say a prayer for me. I texted a couple of my friends, you know, really bad turbulence right now. Please say a prayer for me. I figure as long as I've got the internet, why don't I reach out and get some prayers? So as we approached Columbus, Ohio, my destination, it reminds me of one time I was on one of those little planes and I was flying into Lafayette, Louisiana, and I was seated next to a young guy in the military. I don't know if he's Army or Marines, but he's young, kind of a Gomer Pyle type guy from the South. And he said to me, is Lafayette your destiny? He meant destination. Is Lafayette your destiny? And I said, I sure hope not, because I'd like to get home. Never forgot that guy. And I'm thinking, well, maybe my destiny is going to happen on this plane before I get to Columbus, Ohio. But I made it to Columbus, Ohio. Within, you know, after we got out of that patch of really rough air, it began to smooth out a little bit. And it was still turbulent, but it was nothing like it was before. And I landed, and my wife gave me a big hug and a big kiss. And it's like, okay, great, back on terra firma. But I've been thinking about that ever since what happened last night. And not to make like a big deal out of something that really isn't a big deal, because people fly through turbulence all the time. But it was just one of those moments for me, and I'm sharing it with you for this reason, where I realized, okay, maybe if one thing leads to another, leads to another, maybe I could die. And it's not a topic that I don't think most people like to contemplate death. It's important to be aware of it and to prepare for it, that's for sure. So I just remember thinking in this airplane, as it's just diving and bobbing and shaking and all of that, that, you know, what if this is where my life ends? What do I have to show for it? Am I ready to see God face to face? Am I ready for my exit interview? Have I done everything that the Lord would have wanted me to do? And I don't mean in terms of like things, projects or anything like that. I just mean, have I properly prepared so that if in fact this is the case, then I'll be ready to go. And it was just one of those moments where it was, in that sense at least, it was powerful for me. It was a wake-up call, because here I am talking to you on the radio, no big deal. But it was one of those moments, and I want to share that with you. And I will punctuate that with this passage from the Epistle of St. James. This is in chapter 4. I love this passage, and all the more now because of what happened yesterday. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we shall go into such and such a town and spend a year there doing business and make a profit. You have no idea what your life will be like tomorrow. You are like a puff of smoke that appears briefly and then disappears. Instead, you should say, if the Lord wills it, we shall live to do this or that. And that, by the way, is verses 13 through 15, James chapter 4. So I share that with you for that reason, because who knows, maybe you'll find yourself in a situation at some point. I hope you don't, but these things happen. So when you find yourself in that situation, whatever version of it you may be, think about that. Think about your preparedness. Are you ready? if it should happen. Now, here's a question I really would like to ask a commercial airline pilot. I don't remember, other than like weird old-time things such as the plane crash that killed Newt Rockne, coach for the Notre Dame football team. And I talked about that within the last week or two. But the reason his plane crashed, as I understand it, was because it was one of these planes that was sort of like made, you know, that plane was made by hand. And they didn't have mass production, and it wasn't, you know, they didn't have lots of quality control. Maybe they had no quality control. So the long and the short of it is he's flying in the air. The air is very wet, rain, and maybe some sleet and ice and stuff. And the fabric that covered the wings of this plane, the glue that held the fabric together basically just melted, and the wing came off. It just, the plane sort of disintegrated in midair, and in they went, and that was it. So what I'd really like to ask a commercial airline pilot is, are there any instances where planes actually are brought down because of turbulence? I never have heard about that, not in the modern era. Maybe I just wasn't looking, so I didn't see it in the news. But I don't recall hearing about a plane actually crashing as a result of turbulence in the air. And actually, I almost don't want to know the answer to that question. I want the answer to be no. It never happens. It never happens. So if you're an airline pilot, and that's the actual fact, it never happens, they're airworthy no matter what kind of turbulence, then let me know that. But if there's another answer to that question, then please don't call 888-914-9149 and tell me otherwise. I don't want to think otherwise, okay? So that's my little slice of life. Tell me about yours, whatever it may be. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Allison in League City, Texas. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you?
I am much better today than I was yesterday evening.
Now that you're on the ground.
Yeah. Now that I'm on the ground, that's right. Terra firma.
All right. My question for you was, this morning I was reading about my patron saint to my daughter, who is St. Dymphna. She got an assignment from school yesterday that they're going to do their yearly saints, the second and third graders. They dress up for All Saints Day. She had me read to her my saint. And in the reading, it said that she is part of being known for her chastity. So as I'm reading, of course, my 8-year-old said, "What's chastity?" And I was like, Patrick, in my pocket, is going to tell me later how to explain this. Yeah. And you know what, baby doll? I'm going to get back to you about that tomorrow. Let mommy finish this, and you're going to go to school.
Okay.
So fast forward, and here I am.
Okay. Well, good. So she's 8, so obviously there's a whole set of data that she doesn't have, and she shouldn't have it right now. She doesn't need that information.
Exactly.
So if my 8-year-old asked me that question, I would say something like this. I'd say, you know how mommy and daddy love each other and you see us hugging and kissing? You know how you see that? And she'll say, oh, yeah, I see. I know. And I'll say, well, on chastity, part of it would be like, imagine if daddy was kissing a different lady. And imagine if I was kissing and hugging another lady, not mommy. That would be bad, wouldn't it? Yeah, that would be bad. So because I'm married to mommy, I only kiss and hug her, because I love her and she loves me. And she only kisses and hugs me. You wouldn't want to see mommy kissing some other man, would you? And the little 8-year-old will say, oh no, we don't want to see that at all. So I think something like that is, it's intelligible. They get the idea. An 8-year-old hopefully won't know what kissing and hugging leads to, but they know what kissing and hugging is. And they have then it can register with her, like, oh, okay, I see what you mean. And then as she gets older and it's more age appropriate, and if the issue comes up again, then you can expand on that. But I wouldn't say much more than that at this age.
Okay, yeah, because I also, like, she just did her first Holy Communion this year, and I wanted to continue and make sure she stayed on track between now and confirmation. So I grabbed the Virtues for the Catholic Youth from the Catholic Sprouts website, and it doesn't have chastity in it. It has purity, And I think I heard it on Relevant Radio, because I constantly have you guys on, that purity and chastity are two different things. Purity is of the mind, and right. chastity is of the body, I believe.
Right.
That's what I've understood.
That's a good way to put it. In fact, I believe I spoke about that either yesterday or the day before on this show. And yeah, just to recap, so chastity is the virtue that governs your bodily actions. Purity right. is the virtue that governs your thoughts and your imagination. So you can be chaste in terms of regulating your bodily actions, but have an impure mind. But if you have a pure mind, right. you will be chaste. So purity and chastity go together in that sense.
Awesome. Yes, it was you that I heard it from them. Thank you so much, Patrick. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. If I can leave you with a little chuckle, I remember when I was a kid, and maybe about the same age as your daughter, and I had no earthly clue what adultery meant. And the nuns didn't explain it to us, as obvious for obvious reasons. I honestly thought right. when I was a kid, I went for years thinking that the commandment, the sixth commandment and the ninth commandment, I thought that adultery was a sin for kids who were trying to act like adults. I thought it meant that if you're a kid and they catch you driving a car or smoking a cigarette or doing something that only adults are allowed to do, that that was the sin of adultery. I really did think that that's what it meant.
Yeah, out of the minds of babes, that's what it is. Yep, exactly.
If only that's all it meant. If only that's all it meant. Wouldn't life be a lot less complicated, huh?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I love it. Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate
you,
it all.
Thank you. You're blessed with all your beautiful children. Thanks for the call. 888-914-9149. Why don't we take a quick time out and we'll just go straight back to the phone calls. The number again, 888-914-9149. You can call now. We had a line that just opened up. That can be yours if you call us now. Somebody just called. 888-914-9149. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Waiting for that part. Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt that part. Welcome back, 888-914-9149. How about Denise now in St. John, Indiana? Hello, Denise. Welcome.
Hi, Patrick.
Hey.
Patrick?
Yeah.
I'm bothering you again. I just spoke to you last week, but I wanted to share this with you. My brother, two friends, and I are returning from Mexico on the plane, tired after a fun week. The plane begins to fall. And the oxygen masks fall down. And the stewardess is pounding on the door of one of the restrooms to get this guy with a large sombrero on his head back in his seat. And my brother and I look at each other and we go, oh, my gosh, are mom and dad going to lose both of us? So naturally, right away, the prayers began. And for 10 minutes, we heard nothing. So you have plenty of time to think. You're just free falling. When we reached 10,000 feet, the pilot came on and he told us, I've been very busy up here. We're going to land in Louisiana. He never explained what was wrong. We had to wait for another plane. I had to get back on a plane the next morning to get back to work, you know, home. And my brother said, we've got to do this because several people were getting other ways home. So I got on the plane and with my rosary, and I actually said, and I think this is directly from God because he knew how frightened I was, I actually pictured St. Michael the Archangel, this is going to sound silly, with his great wings around that plane and his halo. I was calm the rest of the way home, and now everyone I know that flies that's scared like me, we all picture St. Michael guiding us. And if, in fact, it's our time to go to Jesus, at least St. Michael is right there with us.
That's a very good point. That is a very
good point. How about it?
Yeah, and
I know you don't want to belabor the point, but I had to tell you this one.
Oh, I don't mind. I mean, I think it's one of those big picture issues, you know, when people are in a situation where you think, well, maybe I could die. This could end that way. Those situations don't happen very often, but when they do, they sure get your attention, don't they?
Oh, my goodness. And like I said, to see people say, nope, I'm done, it's like getting back on a horse. You tell yourself, I can't do this. But I had to do it with God's help, to be very honest with you.
No, that's good.
So I just had to share. Okay,
I'm glad you did, Denise. Yeah, St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. That's for sure.
Oh, I do. And that halo was shining through those dark clouds. Just think of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Denise. Very nice to talk to you again. Twice in 1 week. That's a record, I think. Thank you. Yeah, and I don't have a fear of flying. I mean, I've done so many miles in the air that for me it's just not even a big deal at all. So I don't really have to worry about fear of flying per se, but when you're in a situation like the one that Denise described or the one that I described from yesterday, it does get your attention. I'll share with you another example of this. This took place long ago. This would have been around 1990, I guess, 1991. And some of you in Southern California actually met, before he passed away, Father Louis Marx, who was the pastor of San Secondo de Guasti Parish. Some people say Guasti. It's not Guasti, it's Guasti. But in any case, he was a pastor there. He was my pastor at a different church before that, but just a very good holy priest. Everybody knew him, and they would follow him when he would move from one parish to another. In any case, I had a lecture tour set up in the Boston area. And I think I think it was all confined to generally the Boston area. And I really wanted to do something for Father Marx that would show my appreciation for all that he did. So I said, hey, Father Marx, would you like to join me on this trip? I'm going to be staying at rectories, and I'll be giving talks on the faith. Would you like to take a week off and go with me? And it might have been maybe 5 days. And he said yes. So we went. We flew out there. I did all of the talks and everything, and we're flying home. Now, picture this. So we're flying home from Boston to Los Angeles on one of the big, it was probably a 767. And as we get closer to landing, this was the weird thing. So we get close. We get really close to the ground. We get really close to the runway. It's the final approach. The landing gear is down. The plane is just about to land. And as we're just about to land, suddenly the pilot floors it. So the nose of the plane pulls up. He floors it, and the plane just takes off and goes out over the ocean. And he doesn't say anything to us. And my thought is, okay, well, maybe there's traffic on the runway, and they needed to do a go-around or whatever. So standard operating procedure. And then maybe 5 or 10 minutes go by. The pilot gets on the air, the intercom, and he says, well, we have a bit of a problem. And you never want to hear that. You never want to hear a pilot say, we have a problem. We have a bit of a problem. Because even a bit of a problem is a problem. He said, I just got to tell you what's going on here. We lowered the landing gear, and one of the main landing gears, probably the one, you know, right or left in the middle of the plane, it's not coming all the way down. And so we've got some backup systems, and we tried to crank it and all that, and it's still showing us that it didn't come down yet. So we flew so that the people in the tower could see whether or not this landing gear was down, and it wasn't down. So we said, what we're going to do is we're going to do a big loop. We're going to come back around. And I think they also were maybe dumping a little bit of fuel if there was enough left. And he said, we're going to do another pass. We're going to come down. We think we can get it back in place. So don't worry about it. Everything's going to be fine. Of course, everybody's worrying about it now because you don't want to land a plane at whatever the landing speed is, 150 miles an hour, whatever it is. You don't want to land without one of the landing gears down. That could be bad. So for the ensuing maybe 15 minutes or so that it took for the plane to go back around, go all the way to the east, then turn around, line up, and land, I'm thinking about when I was a kid and I did the Five First Saturdays devotion and the First Fridays devotion. And I remember that one of the promises that was given, I think it's for the Five First Saturdays, is that you will have an opportunity, or I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect that you'll have an opportunity to receive the sacraments before you die. So at this point, I look to my right and I see Father Marks. He's my buddy. He's been sitting there with me, and it dawned on me, and that made me think, like, okay, I'm definitely going to die. I'm going to die, because the promise associated with this devotion is that you'll have an opportunity to go to confession. And he, I got this priest sitting right here, so this is like proof of this promise. And you know what I did? I didn't ask him to go to confession. I thought in my mind, I thought, well, maybe if I don't go to confession, then nothing bad will happen. I know it sounds crazy, right? It's completely illogical. But I was worried that maybe something would happen, maybe we'll die. So the plane landed, obviously. They got that landing gear down. They probably manually cranked it or whatever they did, and it got it down. And everybody was happy, and everybody clapped, and it was fine. But I've never forgotten that. And I remember now, as I look back on it, just how odd it felt to think about that promise and then to know that there was a priest. It was almost like, okay, this is your sign. And thankfully, nothing happened. So there you have that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Roseville, California now and talk to John. Hello, John.
Yes. Hi, Patrick. I wanted to share my near-death experience with you that occurred about 50 years ago. I'm in my 70s now. I was at the street light in my car. I'm the first car waiting at the light. I'm waiting for the light to turn green so I can proceed. Here's what happened. Being in my 20s, I had my radio on full. You could hear nothing. My windows were rolled up. The light turns green, and I'm going to make the turn. In a one moment, an ambulance sped by me on the left in one moment, and I realized that I had been blessed.
Yeah, you sure were. And how did that change the way you looked at life, or did that change the way you related to God?
Well, you know, in your 20s, you're not thinking about dying. But luckily, you know, I am a cradle Catholic, and I was very close to God at the time. But
well, that's a happy ending story, John. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm glad that you lived all these years since then. Thank you for the call. Yeah, to that point, I shared this on the program. This is going back now a couple of years, but something similar happened to me when I was coming out of the bank parking lot. And so I was going to turn left, coming out of the bank parking lot, go through the intersection, turn left. And the light turned. I was the first car ready to go. The light turned. And I kid you not, this is, I'm not embellishing or making anything up. I had all of a sudden a very clear, momentary sense, just wait. I don't know how else to put it. Just wait. Wait a second. Wait. And so I glance over to my right, and this woman I forget what kind of car it was. She comes barreling through the intersection, probably 45 miles an hour. And she just goes right through. And so I look to my left, and then the woman who is on that side of the street who is going to go through the intersection, she and I looked at each other with our mouths open like, oh my gosh, can you believe what would have happened? Because that lady completely ran this red light. And if I hadn't listened to that little intuition that just said, wait, you know, like, because I was going to go. It was green. It's my turn to go. So I waited. And it felt kind of weird. Then a second or two later, this lady goes by. I don't know if I would have been killed, but I could have been badly injured. I guess I could have been killed, I suppose. She was going pretty fast, and I would have been T-boned. So was that my guardian angel? I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't know. I mean, I'd like to think it was. So again, going back to the purpose of my sharing these little details with you is just always be ready. Always be ready. It's a lesson that I have had to learn and relearn a number of times, but just always be ready. That way, if something like that happens and you, this is the way that you're supposed to leave this planet, then you'll be ready and all will be well. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Scott now, listening in Denver. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hello,
how are
Scott.
You today? Good morning, Patrick. Hello.
I'm well, thank you.
Hello.
Good. Yeah, you're on the
air. So I'm a commercial airline pilot, and you had some questions about turbulence. So I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you. Now, I must tell you ahead of time, there's one answer I don't want to hear, and that question is, does turbulence ever bring down commercial airliners? And if the answer is yes, then we'll just say goodbye now, because I don't want to hear a yes answer. But if the answer is no, then please continue.
No, it's especially once you're airborne, you just don't hear about it. In fact, you were discussing, you know, the wing, the possibility of a wing snapping off. And if you want some very enlightening information, you know, Google like wing spar test videos from Boeing. You know, they have a video of their 777 being tested, and they bend that wing spar up to just about 45 degrees.
I saw that. And eventually they do snap it off, right?
Yeah, eventually. And I haven't seen, and I've only heard rumors that, you know, the FAA requires that the wing spars be tested to the point of destruction. And I've even heard of some aircraft manufacturers, perhaps even Boeing, it might have been on their 737, where they physically had to damage the wing spar before they could get it to break. So.
Oh, okay.
They actually,
so if I'm in one of those Embraer, so Scott, if I'm flying around at whatever the altitude is, say 25,000-30,000 feet, in an Embraer jet or one of those regional jets, and there's really bad turbulence, I have two questions. Number one is, does it bother the pilots? Do they get nervous about this, or are they used to it? And is turbulence in itself enough to worry about the plane coming down?
The planes are certified to a certain level of positive G's and negative G's. And obviously, usually they're much higher for a commercial airline. It's certified to a much higher level of positive G feel. So, you know, that push into the seat of your pants. So the first thing we're going to do, you know, when we're cruising around, the first thing we're going to do, so my aircraft, we're going to be cruising around a 0.79 Mach, maybe 0.8 Mach, and so the times the speed of sound. First thing we're going to do is slow down to about 0.76. And what that does is, you know, it's like, you know, imagine your car going down a road, a bumpy road, old bumpy dirt road. You're not going to take that road at 60 miles an hour. You're going to take that road at maybe 40 or 50 miles an hour, knowing that, you know, if you hit a big enough bump, you're going slow enough to keep things under control. You're not going to go flying off into the ditch. Now, obviously, there's no ditches to worry about when you're in the air, but you're going to be, you want the, you know, the air, you want to keep airflow over the wings and such. And so, yeah, it does bump around quite a bit. You displace.
Are the pilots nervous
quite a bit
when that happens?
Displacement. I wouldn't say nervous. You know, at the end of the day, we're all kind of equipment operators, and so we're just kind of, you know, the first thing you're going to do is worry about your passengers and your crew. And so, you know, the seatbelt signs come on, you might hear the ding in the back of the cabin that's alerting the flight attendants to call up to the front, and, you know, and the flight attendants usually get on and say, okay, the cabin's told us to sit down, because, you know, we're checking ahead.
Right. Yeah, they said all that.
We're getting reports from air traffic control. So, and, you just buckle down and go. And but as far as you know, where will aircraft crash because of turbulence? It's certainly not going to be in the air. Where it happens, where you hear about the stories, is landing around thunderstorms, and the big deal is wind shear.
Oh, I see.
So I see. We have a plethora of warning and alert systems that go off in the cockpit when we're dealing with wind shear. Most of them are radar related. Where the radar is looking forward, and then, you know, these newer radars nowadays can actually see, you know, measure displacement of air ahead of you and warn you if there's wind shear ahead.
Interesting.
And our automatic day, night in visual conditions or in instrument conditions, if we get a wind shear warning on our approach, we go around. And that's where you feel the...
I'm reminded, as you're saying that, sorry to interrupt you. I'm reminded of that, I think it was a Delta Airlines, a flight that crashed right as it was landing in at DFW, and it hit a big, I don't know if it was a water tank or maybe an oil tank. Some of the people survived, and it was a wind shear where it just got pushed down into the ground, and there was nowhere else that it could go, but it crashed. You probably, simulators, you probably simulate that, those kind of things, right?
Oh, yearly. Yeah, yearly. So what that was an effect of is what was called a downburst. And so, and you can see these things if you it's well documented, meteorological phenomena. We're trained to recognize these things when we're experiencing a wind shear burst and then a downburst, you'll notice right away the aircraft has actually got better performance. You need to start throttling the engines back because, you're developing more lift than you want in that phase of flight. And we're trained that, okay, if you start seeing this symptom or this issue or you start putting the puzzle together and you realize, okay, you're in a potential wind shear environment or downburst. And we're trained right away. Okay, you see those, you go. But they actually in training they do intentionally tell us, okay, take it through the initial wind shear, get into the downburst, and then recover. And it takes just about everything these airplanes have sometimes to recover from that. And we're in the simulator, obviously, but simulating us to take, to really fly the aircraft to the edge of its envelope to save the aircraft. So.
Yeah. But I guess my final question, Scott, I have to take a break. You, as a pilot in a real flight situation, not in the simulator, you'll do everything you can to avoid being in that situation where you have to stress the aircraft.
Oh, definitely.
You go away from it, around it or something.
Yeah, we go away from it. We'll hold outside of the airport area. We'll do what we can not to go into it. And the bottom line is you don't go into it. You hold, divert. You don't put yourself in that situation.
That sounds reassuring to me, Scott. Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. Fly safe. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
I want to share some information with you that came out in, of all places, the Washington Post, which is very left of center, owned by Jeff Bezos. And here's the headline. And it just surprised me that it appeared in the Washington Post. But finally, this information is now coming into the mainstream. Natural immunity to COVID is powerful. Policymakers seem afraid to say so. I'm going to read this to you. And you've heard me ask this question over the months over the last, say, 6 months or so. What about natural immunity? What about the people who have had COVID? And do they need to get a vaccine? I mean, if they have the natural immunity, isn't that sufficient to get to herd mentality, et cetera, et cetera? And not only have we not really heard much discussion, if any, about those who have natural immunity because they've already had COVID, but people who even raise the question, they get that, the death stare from the people who are super gung-ho about masks and vaccinations and such because, don't get uppity on this issue here. And so here it is in the Washington Post. Listen to this. It's okay to have an incorrect scientific hypothesis, but when new data proves it wrong, you have to adapt. Unfortunately, many elected leaders and public health officials have held on far too long to the hypothesis that natural immunity offers unreliable protection against COVID-19, a contention that is being rapidly debunked by science. More than 15 studies have demonstrated the power of immunity acquired by previously having had the virus. A 700,000-person study in Israel 2 weeks ago found that those who had experienced prior infections were, get this, 27 times less likely to get a second symptomatic COVID infection than those who were vaccinated. Now, obviously, there's symptomatic infection, asymptomatic infection. So this test shows about those who got symptomatic infections. This affirmed a June Cleveland Clinic study of healthcare workers who are often exposed to the virus, in which none who had previously tested positive for the coronavirus got reinfected. None. The study authors concluded that people who have had SARS-CoV-2 infection are unlikely to benefit from a COVID-19 vaccination. Now, if you were to have said that, those very words on Twitter or Facebook before this article came out, chances are you would have run the risk of being, you know, at the very least put into Twitter jail for 48 hours or a week, because that went against the grain of what you would hear in the mainstream media. So let me read that sentence to you again. The study authors concluded that people who have had the SARS-CoV-19 infection are unlikely to benefit from COVID-19 vaccinations. And in May, a Washington University study found that even a mild COVID infection resulted in long-lasting immunity. So, the emerging science suggests that natural immunity is as good as or better than vaccine-induced immunity. That's why it is so frustrating that the Biden administration has repeatedly argued that immunity conferred by vaccines is preferable to immunity caused by natural infection, as NIH Director Francis Collins said in an interview. That rigid adherence to an outdated theory is also reflected in President Biden's recent announcement that large companies must require their employees to get vaccinated or submit to regular testing, regardless of whether they had previously had the virus. Downplaying the power of natural immunity has had deadly consequences. In January, February, and March, we wasted scarce vaccine doses on millions of people who previously had COVID. If we had asked Americans who were already protected by natural immunity to step aside in the vaccine line, tens of thousands of lives could have been saved. This is not just in hindsight, as in 2020 hindsight. Many of us were vehemently arguing and writing at the time for such a rationing strategy. One reason public health officials may be afraid to acknowledge the effectiveness of natural immunity is that they fear it will lead to some to choose getting the infection over the vaccination. That's a legitimate concern. But we can encourage all Americans to get vaccinated while still being honest about the data. In my clinical experience, I have found patients to be extremely forgiving with evolving data if you are honest and transparent with them. Yet, when asked the common question, "I've recovered from COVID, is it absolutely essential that I get vaccinated?" many public health officials have put aside the data and responded with a synchronized yes, even as studies have shown that reinfections are rare and often asymptomatic or mild when they do occur. The tide, the author of the article says, may finally be shifting as pressure has grown on federal officials. Last week on CNN, and you heard this because I played it for you on the program. Last week on CNN, Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease specialist, hinted that the government may be rethinking its stance on natural immunity, saying, "I think that is something that we need to sit down and discuss seriously." And I'm going to pause there for a second because I flipped out when I first heard him say that. And when I played it for you, I explained why I flipped out, because isn't that a conversation that you should have had, Dr. Fauci, a long, long time ago? I mean, if you are, and I have no doubt that you are, the nation's top infectious disease specialist, well, since you know so much about infectious diseases, you would know, I would think, I would hope you would know about natural immunity among those who have had COVID-19. So why is it that only now, when Sanjay Gupta asked you the question on air, why is it only now that you're starting to think that maybe you should sit down and discuss that seriously? That is mind-boggling to me. He should have said, "Oh yeah, we know all about that. Here's the protocol." It said, it's almost as though, they didn't want to delve into it because it might derail the COVID vaccine express. Continuing, some large medical centers like Spectrum Health in Grand Rapids, Michigan, have already announced they will recognize natural immunity for their vaccine requirements. Some Republican governors have picked up on the public frustration over how the scientific guidance is inconsistent with the data. Florida Governor DeSantis accusing the Biden administration of not following the science by crafting its vaccine mandate without taking into consideration infection-conferred immunity. The current Centers for Disease Control and Prevention position about vaccinating children also dismisses the benefits of natural immunity. The Los Angeles County School District recently mandated vaccines for students ages 12 and up who want to learn in person. but young people are less likely to suffer severe or long-lasting symptoms from COVID-19 than adults and have experienced rare heart complications from the vaccines. In Israel, heart inflammation has been observed in between 1 in 3,000 and 1 in 6,000 males ages 16 to 24. The CDC has confirmed 854 reports nationally in people aged 30 and younger who got the vaccine. A second dose of the two-shot mRNA vaccine, like that produced by Pfizer and Moderna, may not even be necessary in children who have had COVID. Since February, Israel's health ministry has been recommending that anyone, adult or adolescent, who has recovered from COVID-19 receive only a single mRNA vaccine dose instead of two. Even though the risk of severe illness during a reinfection is exceedingly low, some data has demonstrated a slight benefit to one dose in this situation. Other countries use a similar approach. The United States could adopt this strategy now as a reasonable next step in transitioning from an overly rigid to a more flexible vaccine requirement policy. For comparison, the CDC has long recommended that kids do not get the chickenpox vaccine if they had chickenpox infection in the past. Makes sense. I mean, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I can read, and this sure makes sense to me. The incorrect hypothesis, this is the conclusion of the article, the incorrect hypothesis that natural immunity is unreliable has resulted in the loss of thousands of American lives, avoidable vaccine complications, and damaged the credibility of public health officials. Given the recent mandate announced by the White House, it would be good for our public health leaders to show humility by acknowledging that the hypothesis they repeatedly trumpeted was not only wrong, but it may be harmful. Let's all come together around the mounting body of scientific literature and real-world clinical experience that is telling us not to require the full vaccine regimen in people who recovered from COVID in the past. Public health officials changing their position on natural immunity after so much hostility toward the idea would go a long way in rebuilding the public trust. Now, that's an opinion piece, but it's an opinion piece in the Washington Post, and it's from somebody who is well-versed in the science. So Jim's going to get a link to that article posted on the show Twitter feed. If you'd like to share it, maybe send it around to people who might be interested. The show Twitter feed is at P Madrid Show, and you'll also find it as soon as it gets posted on the show page, which is relevantradio.com/Patrick. Let's go to John in Petaluma, California. Hello, John.
Hello, John. Hi, Patrick. My problem or question for you is way off the topics you've been talking about recently, but
It's fine. This show is kind of like a plane in turbulence. We bounce from one thing to the next, so it's not like one theme. You can talk about anything you want.
Okay, my situation is, you have to give me a minute to explain my daily routine. I'm having problems feeling that I'm serving the Lord enough for all that he's done for me. I go to church 7 days a week. I've joined the Knights of Columbus to help out at church. I fast three times a week. I don't eat anything for the Lord. I pray the rosary every single morning. I thank God every morning for everything he's done for me, given for me, and continues to do for me and for dying for me. And I tell him I love him above all things, and same with the Blessed Mother. And I still feel that my service to him is completely inadequate for all he's done for me. And I've talked to several priests about this, but one priest even told me I should cut down on my praying, and that doesn't seem to sit with me that is the right answer.
Yeah. So are you wondering what more you can do or what more you should do?
Yeah, what more I can do. I feel my service to him, because all I do is basically help out at the church and do a lot of praying and fasting and stuff, but I don't feel I'm really serving him that well, and I'd like to do a lot more, and I pray for him to tell me how to do this every day. But
I think that's the answer right there. Forgive my interruption, John. I think you just gave the right answer. Ask the Lord to show you. Ask him to show you. Lord, I want to give everything I can to you. I want to serve you in every way I can, and I feel as though maybe there's something I'm missing, although it does sound like you're doing a heroic amount of praying and all the other things that you're doing, which are all very fine. So continue doing that. And, you know, actually that feeling of a desire to do more or a desire to love God more, that's a sign of real spiritual maturity. People who are immature in the faith generally don't have that feeling. But the great saints, and it sounds like you're well on your way to becoming a great saint, John, the great saints have that kind of gnawing hunger of wanting to love God more and to be closer to him and to serve other people, just like you're saying. So I think that's a really good sign if you have that feeling. Now, my one word of advice would be, don't allow this to become a source of pride for you. In other words, don't look in the mirror, figuratively speaking, and think of just how great you are and how much you're serving God and, you know, all this. Keep it humble, keep it low key, and then just ask God to show you. And if there's something else he wants of you, he will show you because he loves you. Thank you, John. Pray for me. With all those prayers that you're doing every day, I could sure use some. Thank you for that. I'll be right back with more right after this.